Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Peyto Exploration and Development fourth quarter results conference call. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Darren Gee, President and CEO. Please go ahead.
Well, thanks, Jenny, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us for our year-end 2011 results conference call. We had, I think, a record year in 2011, so we're excited to all be here today to talk about it. With me in the room, we've got Scott Robinson, our Chief Operating Officer, Kathy Turgeon, our Chief Financial Officer, Dave Thomas, our VP Exploration, JP Lachance, our VP Exploitation, Tim Louie, our new VP of Land, and of course we've got Jim Grant, our Investor Awareness Rep. So, Jim, I see you've got a big list of questions there for us. Why don't I turn it to you?
Thank you. For those of you who are new to our conference calls, we hold the first half as a question and answer session where I ask some of the senior management questions about Peyto and its latest financials before we turn the call over to questions from investors and representatives of investment businesses. Darren, a year ago, the 2010 Q4 results call, I'd asked you why we were bucking the trend and continuing to drill our natural gas prospects as gas prices softened. With further pressure on the price of natural gas, I have to ask, why are we still bucking the trend? Is there a point at which we need to cut back this activity?
Well, Jim, you know, that's obviously a question that's pretty pertinent on the minds of a lot of investors, considering where gas prices are. And, you know, I answer most investors that Peyto's strategy is all about generating returns for shareholders. You know, if we didn't think we were generating good returns on the capital we're investing today, we wouldn't be investing. And I think we've demonstrated that in the past we will be disciplined when it comes to generating those returns. If we don't think we're getting enough, we're going to slow down. And we've shown our investors that we're disciplined enough to do that. So, you know, today we're bucking the trend, there's no question, and it's because the returns for us are still very strong. I don't think the same can be said about the rest of the industry, of course, but the reason our returns are better than the rest of the industry is because we have a cost structure advantage. That's kind of the point of being the low-cost producer. There isn't much point in being that low-cost guy if you never get the benefit of it. So when you look at the cost advantage we have over the rest of the industry, which is probably closer to, you know, $10 a BOE plus, I mean, we have $10 a BOE op cost advantage alone. That's the difference today between good returns and just breaking even. $10 a BOE on $50 a BOE of revenue is 20%. I mean, that's the returns that most guys are looking for. So when they're breaking even, we're making 20%, which is, you know, that's where we are today. Wow. In reality, today, we're having to make some adjustments even to get to the 20% when the gas price is sub $2. But that really means that for everybody else, there's a lot of guys really losing a lot of money. And that's why you see companies cutting their capex and cutting back their production. But, you know, you ask me when do we have to cut, I'd say it's when our returns no longer make the grade. And for some stuff, that's really low gas prices. JP was just showing me some economics on, you know, a typical Cardium horizontal well in Sundance, for instance, that if we have the deep cut in place and we can get, say, a 10% reduction in our service costs because of inactivity in the industry, then we still generate something like 30% return at a dollar gas prices. And, you know, we all know that $1 gas prices aren't going to last, but that's pretty darn good. You know, for other stuff, we've already made the cut. Our Wilrich wells, for instance, for the most part, they don't make the grade today, so we're not doing any of them that don't. And we've redirected that capital to other opportunities. It's just that we still have lots of opportunities to fill our plate. You know, obviously, I'd say at $1 gas prices, not the $2 we have today, but even lower, $1 gas prices, the list of opportunities that makes the hurdle get smaller. And, you know, maybe our plate isn't quite as full anymore. But so, you know, we're constantly running economics. We're grinding on our costs. And I think we're going to make the call based on returns and on the gas price that we see.
Well, thank you. Now, before we go any further, I would like to welcome our newest member of the management team, Tim Louie, our VP of Land, to his first conference call with us. Welcome aboard, Tim, and would you like to give us your thoughts on the assets and opportunities we have at Peyto?
Thanks, Jim. Definitely excited to become a member of the Peyto management team. When I first started reviewing the Peyto assets, what really became apparent was how focused our land base is. Our land holdings are in a fairway approximately 150 miles long by 40 miles wide. And this concentrated land base allows our technical teams to focus on generating drillable locations within core areas in order to create maximum value for our shareholders. And this way the team doesn't get distracted with non-core assets. Also impressed with the high working interest of the Peto lands. At the end of 2011, our average working interest was 80%. And one last notable observation is the high percentage of lands where Peto has 100% working interest. And approximately 70% of our lands are held solely by Peto. And these 100% lands allow Peto to efficiently convert undeveloped lands into producing properties. And it also provides us with flexibility to arrange drilling locations in response to external conditions such as surface access or the soft gas prices that we currently are experiencing.
Mm-hmm. Darren, when I read our fourth quarter and year-end results news release for 2011, I'm struck by the depth of explanations of what the performance measures we use are telling us specifically and how we reconcile that with what we are presenting in terms of the value we created for our shareholders. What do you want to convey to investors about the information we present? Which measures do you think are the most important and best showcase what we've accomplished?
You know, Jim, I think principally we're trying to show with this analysis that we're generating good returns on the capital that investors charge us with deploying. And I guess, you know, we're justifying in some ways why they should leave the capital in our hands as opposed to us dividending it out. So, you know, I would encourage all investors to read carefully our year-end report. You know, we do a lot of analysis there and our reserves release and my monthly report this month, too, where I try to explain in a little more detail what we're trying to accomplish with the analysis and why we do it. But, you know, as a shareholder, I want to see what kind of returns we're generating and what kind of value we're creating with every dollar that we spend. And, sure, you know, the time over which that profit is generated is important, but I don't get too fussed with timelines. I mean, longer payouts are okay if you have low cost of capital, which we do, and you can still get really high rates of return. So what we showed is that the new well generated over 30% internal rate of return, and when you add in all the other things that the Peto team accomplished, the operating cost gains, the facility expansions, the hedges, everything that the team worked on, the returns closer to 60% IRR. 60% IRR in, you know, in this economy is amazing. And to be able to do that on a large amount of money is even more amazing. You know, if we can only do that on $1 million, then so be it. But if we can generate 60% return on $380 million or $400 million or $500 million, then I think that really is amazing. And that's what the Peto team's done this year. So, you know, very high returns on a large capital program, and that to me was pretty spectacular. So I think that's the most important thing that shareholders should really focus on.
Okay. Now, turning to our Chief Operations Officer and VP of Operations, Scott Robinson. Scott, one of the major elements of our current operating environment is the price of natural gas. I note that we published in our Q4 report that if we hit the $1 per gigajoule price point, we would consider shutting in a small portion of our current production. Just how small a portion of our whole production is that? And what about the rest of our production? Is it still worth producing at prices lower than $1 an MCF?
Yeah, Jim, thank you. The current sub-$2 price obviously is very taxing. Darren's alluded to that. A number of producers are acutely focusing on the issue of gas price. For us, at the current pricing of about $1.60 to $1.70, we're essentially all of our production is fine. It's generating profit. But we did just finish an exercise test, hypothetically low price of $1 a gigajoule. At that price level, just under 300 barrels or 2 million equivalent of gas from a net 40 wells would no longer make the grade. If you put that amount of production in perspective of our total production level, it's an awfully low number at less than 1%. So it's pretty impressive that over 99% of our production makes the grade down to $1 per gigajoule. It's useful to actually to add a little color to that, Jim. We've got a blend of different well types. Our cardiums at 40 to 60 barrels a million translate into $4 an MCF when you're at $1 a gigajoule gas price. We've got a group of opportunities in the Nautikiwin and Falher, and that hypothetical $1 a gigajoule translates to over $2 per MCF equivalent for those wells at their 13 to 18 barrels a million. And then our driest wells still make over $1.50 an MCF when sales gas is at that dollar per gigajoule. So when you couple those uplifts from liquids and heat content with our low operating costs, it's no wonder that our wells are able to survive and thrive in this price environment.
Right. So in our Q4 year-end report, Scott, and previously, we've spoken of our plans to upgrade the processing plants and provide a deeper cut of liquids. Can you explain the changes to value and production volumes that the projects will add? And can you also give us an update on the implementation timing for these various projects?
We're at various stages on three active deep cut projects. The most mature is our $20 million plus Old Man addition, which is expected to start up later this year. The other two are similar projects for our Nose Hill and Wild Hay plants, which will be starting up likely next year, early part of next year. The essence of these projects is to add additional cooling process to the existing plants to allow us to extract a larger fraction of the valuable resident liquid stream from our raw produced gas. Components such as propane, butane, and pentane are worth about 4 to 6 times as much in the liquid form, and that's the driver for these projects. Between the three projects that we have in progress, our independent reserve evaluators have estimated an incremental value strictly from this from these projects, ranging from at a 5% discount rate of over $200 million to $125 million of incremental value at a 10% discount rate, and those values being net of the $60 million investment to make those projects happen. In terms of the volume implications, when we knock out additional liquids, we'll see our sales gas shrink by an additional couple of percent just because we're removing those constituents. We'll see an increase for that gas that's put through these plants, an increase in liquid production by about 10 to 20 barrels per million. And when you put it all together on a 6-to-1 BOE basis, a given production stream will be bumped up by about 4 to 6% in volume just from the changes in liquid production and gas shrinkage.
Okay. Now, turning to our VP of Exploration, Dave Thomas, I want to ask you, Dave, as we've indicated in our reserves podcast in the fourth quarter report, we're prioritizing our more liquids-rich prospects for development. What are these more specifically, and how extensive is our inventory of these prospects?
Jim, Peyto has now tested 7 different formations with the horizontal drilling, but 2 formations stand out with the highest liquids content, and specifically these are the Cardium and the Falher. Fortunately, our Peyto drilling inventory is strong in both zones. We did an internal review of all our inventory at the end of 2011, and we identified about 309 Cardium and 182 Falher horizontal drilling locations. And since that time, our independent reserve auditors have also reviewed our inventory, and they, using more conservative criteria, recognized 206 Cardium and 34 Falher locations. The biggest difference is with our new Falher play, which is still in its early history and in which we see a lot of room to grow. So, Jim, starting 2012, we had a conservative total Cardium plus Falher inventory by our reserves auditors of 240 liquids-rich horizontal locations, and an internal inventory of 491, which includes locations with a higher risk component. One point I want to emphasize is that these inventory numbers are not static. We always are aiming to replenish what we drill, and if we're doing a good job, we'll replenish more than what we drill. For instance, Peyto has just finished up a very busy 2011 where we spud 70 of our horizontal inventory locations. However, our reserve auditors actually recognize a net gain of 103 inventory locations year over year. And that means we spud 70 wells, but we added 173 new ones.
Wow, that's impressive. Darren, our year-end reserves for 2011 show significant growth of reserves and of the value of our reserves despite the softening of prices. Can you give us an idea of how this was accomplished in light of the declining price?
You know, Jim, like Dave was just talking about, we've obviously drilled a lot of profitable wells this year and added a lot of new reserves, and we also purchased a bunch of new lands that have more undeveloped locations on them, and those are reflected in the proven and probable undeveloped increases. And then, you know, we've got the deep cut facilities coming too, which also help enhance the reserves and the value, but You know, I think almost most importantly is our low cost structure. We've maintained a very low cost position, and that means that the reserves that we developed this year are generating positive cash flow through all low gas price tests, you know, and that really means they're truly incremental. We see a lot of companies today that are reporting reserves growth in their undeveloped categories, but very few are reporting reserves growth in their producing category. You know, instead, these guys are actually reporting impairments and write-downs on their values because, you know, those reserves are underwater at these prices. And these are the prices that the engineering companies are using in their valuation, which those are actually higher than the spot prices and the strip prices that we're looking at. So, you know, you're probably going to see those same companies continue to take impairments and write-downs, whereas, you know, Peyto's assets, what we've been building and what we own today are all solidly in the black because we built them ourselves and they're very low cost and they're just going to continue to be that way.
Right. Now, Tim, in a way the land department's past is the rest of the company's future. Can you give us an overview of what we acquired in land positions in 2011 and how it fits in with our plans in 2012 and beyond?
Certainly, Jim. In the fourth quarter, Peyto spent $5.9 million at Alberta Crown Sales to acquire 18 sections. And 15 out of the 18 sections are situated in our northern Cardium Fairway. A portion of the Q4 land expenditures, being $1.2 million, was related to acquisitions within a new discovery area. For 2011, Peyto spent a total of $21 million to acquire 63 sections at an average cost of $518 per acre. 28 out of the 63 sections acquired, which works out to roughly 45% of the acquisitions, are situated in the liquids-rich Cardium Fairway in the Cutbank, Smoky, and Kiskew areas of the Alberta Deep Basin. The 2011 Cardium land acquisitions are an integral part of Peyto's strategy to drill more liquids-rich wells, and our technical team has already identified 20 drillable locations, the majority of which are situated on the lands acquired in Q4. And in fact, we've already drilled 3 horizontal Cardium wells on these newly acquired wells in the first quarter of 2012. It is worth mentioning that 85% of the parcels that were acquired in 2011 are a result of Peyto-initiated postings. And although we still have to react and review competitor postings, our technical team strives to be ahead of the competition by posting lands in the configuration and rights that we desire. So we'll continue this approach in the future as we add land to our existing core areas and also grow land in our new discovery areas.
Okay. Turning to Kathy Turgeon, our VP of Finance. Kathy, in the fourth quarter, we've shown a one-time charge of $7.2 million. What is this, and will we see charges like this in the future?
Thanks, Jim. No, we will not see charges like this in the future. This item specifically relates to a restructuring cost from our 2003 trust conversion. It was the payout of the stock options that were outstanding at that time. We claimed that as a deductible expense on our taxes in 2003. We were audited on that in 2008 and reassessed as a capital cost, which would generate an amount deductible over time instead of at one time. This resulted in the payment of $7.2 million for tax and for interest and penalties, $5 million for tax and $2.2 million for interest and penalties. We paid that in 2008, but carried it as a recoverable amount on our balance sheet as there was a court case that supported our position that that was, in fact, a recoverable amount. Unfortunately, in Q4 2011, the court case that we were relying on was lost in the Court of Appeals. So we wrote this amount off through our income statement. The impact on our funds from operation was a decrease by 5 cents per share and with the same impact on our earnings per share. We do continue to have this court case held in abeyance pending a decision to hear the precedent court case at the Supreme Court. But for financial statement purposes, it's been dealt with. This was a very unusual one-time transaction and not in the normal course of our business. On a go-forward basis, we would not expect to see such an item again. And on a regular business basis, we have $998 million of tax pools, which are eligible to shelter us from income tax for the foreseeable future. And there's more details on our tax pools in the MD&A.
Okay, thanks, Kathy. Now, on January 3rd of 2012, Kathy, we announced that we had closed a private placement of senior notes for $100 million. How does this affect our balance sheet, and how has it affected our borrowing ability? Also, what motivated us to do this?
Well, it really doesn't affect our borrowing ability. We have $725 million of capacity. When we issued these notes, the revolving credit facility is reduced dollar for dollar because it's issued on the same terms as our credit facility. But that wasn't our purpose in issuing this. Our purpose was to begin to diversify our long-term debt. Historically, we've always used just a 1+1 year revolver. And we felt that given the constant nature of some of our debt, that we're not going to be repaying everything down to zero, it would be good to lock in a portion of that. So we issued 7-year notes at 4.39%, which is an interest rate that's equivalent to what we're paying on shorter-term money. And this allows us to reduce somewhat our renewal risk, because, of course, we have to renew our revolver every year. And it also allows us to get an NAIC rating, which you need for the more inexpensive kind of private debt.
Okay. So, JP, turning to Jean-Paul Chance, our VP of Exploitation. JP, how have we adjusted the composition of our drilling program going forward into 2012 based on these lower gas prices?
Thanks, Jim. As Dave mentioned, we've got an abundance of both liquids-rich locations like the Cardium Formation, the Flare, and in some areas the Notikewin and Blue Sky, coupled with some very predictable high-rate gas locations, albeit leaner, like the Wilrich Formation, for example, from which we can choose from. So last year, in 2011, we drilled a composition of wells more heavily weighted towards the leaner, high-rate gas plays, because at that time, with higher gas prices, the economics were superior. Since then, we've seen a degradation in gas prices, such that our higher liquid yield plays are more profitable. Again, Dave mentioned some numbers there, that of the 400-plus drilling locations we've got recognized in our reserve report alone, over 200 of those are in the liquid-rich Cardium Formation, in areas like our newly acquired Kiskew lands that Tim mentioned, and in the greater Sundance area. So for 2012, we basically retooled our drilling program to focus the vast majority, roughly 70-80%, of our drilling towards these liquid-rich plays, along with our enhanced liquid recovery projects at our plants that Scott mentioned. And we'll leave our large inventory of leaner, high-rate gas locations on the bench for now, and we'll be well-positioned to take advantage of changes to the market in the future.
Okay. Now, Scott, last year we were busy through breakup, and I see this year we are planning a more traditional shutdown period for drilling and completion activities. Can you expand on the rationale for this change in strategy and any implications it might have on our production levels?
Jim, yeah, if the current low gas price persists through the summer, we believe it's very appropriate to cease drilling and completion activities for that month and a half to 2 month breakup period for a couple reasons. Firstly, operations tend to be more difficult and costly during that period because of weather and road constraints that adversely affect transporting goods and services. And in this low commodity price, there's no sense in taking on incremental costs to make something happen during that period of time. The second reason for the shutdown, it gives us a bit of a temporary reprieve from the operations, the intensity and grind of active operation. Our guys have been going at it nonstop for a couple of years now. We'll use the break time to turn it back and review and analyze some of our results and identify opportunities for improvement. So when breakup does end, we'll be poised to resume our active operations, and we'll gear up with a refreshed intensity and a renewed focus as a result of that period of gathering ourselves. Obviously, there will be an impact on production. The lack of activity will stall out our production for a couple of months in the middle part of this year.
Okay. Now, Scott, we note in our discussion on the 2011 capital expenditures that our average well costs are down slightly year over year, partly attributable to improved drilling efficiencies and reduced drill times. Are there any other movements afoot on further improving the efficiencies in drilling performance and well cost reductions that we might look forward to in 2012?
Yeah, we're always scheming and looking and considering different ways of doing things for sure. That's just part of our natural operations. Recently here, we've undertaken some adaptations to our drilling design that at this early stage appear to be bearing some fruit. These changes have led to record drill times for a few wells where we have employed these changes, a couple of Cardium wells and a Falher well. We drilled these wells in just over 10 days as compared to norms of about 20 days. These time savings have shaved just under $1 million off of what otherwise is normally a $2.8 to $3 million drilling cost. So it's a very substantial improvement. Naturally, we're quite optimistic about the impact of these changes, the impact might have on our drilling program as a whole, but it's still in the early stages, and it's still too early to state with confidence if we can regularly repeat these kinds of results. But this type of capital cost savings couldn't have come at a better time, and we're very excited about it.
Mm-hmm. So, Aaron, can you give us your view on how our capital program for 2012 and how we will manage the capital spending plan, given the low gas price environment we are now in, and the uncertainty of pricing in the summer affects us, and how is our hedging program holding up, and does it support our capital plan?
You know, Jim, with the deterioration in gas prices, I have to believe that there's just going to be more and more producers that are going to cut their budget. And, you know, that results obviously in services freeing up, and hopefully that results in us getting lower service costs. And probably most of that's going to happen after breakup. And so that's when we want to take advantage of that. So we're trying to, you know, time our capital program this year with that in mind, pushing a little more of it later into the summer and into the fall. You know, again, that's the whole point of being the low-cost producer, so that you can take advantage when other people can't. You know, I'd expect the second half of 2012 will be significantly busier for us than say, the first half. You know, as for hedging, we don't know when the price is going to turn, and so we're continuing to put forward sales in place every month. We've sold about a third of this year's production at a pretty decent price, somewhere in that sort of $4.50 to $5 range, and we need to continue to fill in hedges for the balance of 2012 and 2013 and even beyond that. And you know, today the price doesn't look very good, of course. Over that period, it's sort of $2.50 to $3. But we're still doing small amounts every month, same as we always have. We're still layering it in, and so we're going to average out and level load over that time. You know, eventually the gas price is going to recover, and we'll probably be behind a bit on those hedges. But, you know, we saw that in the past when gas price is going up and our realized price is a little bit behind. And when it's going down, then we're in this environment where we're, you know, recovering off a lot of that, and we're gaining through the lows, and we're able to level load our activity.
Okay. So, Darren, where do you see our focus in 2012, and what other comments would you like to make about the outlook for our activities this year?
So, Jim, I think our focus is the same as it's always been at Peyto. You know, we're focused on return. That comes first and foremost here, and, you know, we're small, we're nimble, we dynamically adjust to the commodity prices and the service costs, and we only do those projects that are going to generate the returns that we're looking for. And thankfully, as you know, the guys around this table have talked about today, we have a large inventory of just those kinds of projects to work on. You know, this year, it's liquids-rich gas, it's Cardium, it's the Falher, it's the deep-cut facilities that we're going to be working on. And I suspect this is going to be a pretty good year to buy land, cheap land, load up on future inventory at some relatively low costs, just like we have been over the last couple of years. You know, Peyto's in great shape to take advantage this year. When all this distress from low gas prices comes, we're going to be taking advantage. You know, it's kind of funny because investors, you know, they're always told to invest in the low-cost producer, to look for the low-cost producer. But, you know, I don't think a lot of investors really know why they want to invest in the low-cost producer. I mean, not just because the low-cost producer can be counter-cyclical, but you want to invest in the low-cost producer because he's going to thrive in the low-price environment, not because he's just going to survive. I mean, if you've got a decent balance sheet, even if you're higher cost, you can survive your way through. But we don't want to just survive now. We want to take advantage and thrive right now. And, you know, we've been in arguably a low-gas price environment for the last 2 years, and look what Peyto's done. I mean, we've had spectacular performance over the last 2 years. I think, you know, as the lowest cost producer, we're going to be out there delivering, again, very good performance in 2012, because that's the perfect environment for us.
Okay. You know, at this time, I'd like to turn the call back over to the operator for call-in questions from our participants. So, operator, if you could do that for us.
Certainly. Thank you. Our first question is from Robert Belinsky from Morningstar. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everybody. Congratulations on another great quarter.
Morning, Robert.
Just had a couple of questions. First, thanks for giving the dollar AECO as kind of that lower boundary before you shut in. I was just wondering, though, what is the oil price assumption baked into that?
You know, Robert, obviously we're trying to not move too many dials when we do this kind of analysis. So typically we're assuming what the current price is at, which sits somewhere around that $100 mark. We outlined in the MD&A for the first time this year our realized product prices for each of the liquids pieces, so that you can see how those liquids pieces are priced relative to light oil. But I think one of the things we're also seeing right now, which is kind of interesting, is that there's, you know, some pressure on light oil prices, or there was a little bit over the last couple of months, and yet things like condensate didn't go down. We were still seeing premiums paid for condensate as diluent in Alberta. So we pick $100 oil, we vary the gas price, and we assume traditional sort of offsets for our liquids pricing that we realize for condensate, propane, and butane. But I don't know that it's a perfect assumption to assume that, you know, say if oil prices go down, that our products are going to realize less. And so, you know, it's a linear relationship. It is for the most part, but we've seen some change from that.
Okay, great. Second question. Right now, it says you have 6 rigs going. You're going to back off this spring. In order to kind of have that uplift in spending in the second half of the year, how many rigs do you think you'd need to deploy that capital at that level?
Scott, do you want to talk about
it? We've actually just dropped down to 5 rigs, just for clarity there. And coming out of breakup, we envision starting up with that 5 to 6 rigs, and we may ramp that up towards 8 rigs. You know, it'll depend on a number of different things, the well species that we're pursuing, some of these capital efficiencies that we've just discussed today. If they're extrapolatable into the future, we'll be able to do more, spend more, drill more wells with fewer rigs. So those are some of the considerations, but we could see ourselves ramping up, if conditions are right, to about 8 rigs.
Okay. And then last question is, given your success in generating return while you're accelerating your capital program, have you been approached at all by any potential acquirers? And just, I guess, if you could give kind of your thoughts on what you might want to see if someone did make an offer, or would you even be willing to accept one? Thanks.
Well, I guess it really depends on the offer, doesn't it? You know, as I say to people, we're selling hydrocarbons every day, so if somebody comes along and offers us enough for all of our hydrocarbons, I'm sure we would entertain selling them all at once. No, I mean, we're not looking to sell Beto. We're busy building the asset base out, and I think with the results that we've shown here, we're probably generating better returns than anyone else in the industry. So those assets are probably best suited to sit with this team so that they can develop them and generate the most return off of them. But you're right, there is a lot of guys shopping around. There's a lot of foreign nationals sniffing around Calgary looking for bargains. And arguably, there's a lot of distress from this gas price. So, you know, that's why they're here. And they don't believe the gas price is going to last. They have longer-term views. These guys, including, you know, a lot of U.S. private equity even, these guys are definitely with a 5 to 7 year view that gas is going to be worth a heck of a lot more, and so they believe this is the best time to position themselves. You know, I think we probably share that view, that the long-term future for natural gas is very strong, and so we believe the assets we're building today are going to definitely benefit from better prices, and we think we're in the lows, but you just never know when that's going to happen. So, you know, the best protection we can do and create for our shareholders, I think, is to generate very good returns on the current strip, not rely on some sort of price assumption that's higher than today and go spending capital that way. I think if we can spend a lot of capital and generate very good returns on today's price assumption, then if it gets better in the future, which we think it should, then we're generating even better returns than what we're seeing today. So, you know, if again, if somebody comes banging down our door with a really big number, obviously we're going to have to go to our shareholders with that. But you know, to date, we're, I think, outperforming, and our shareholders are happy to let us build the asset.
Okay, that's all I got. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Robert.
Thank you. Our following question is from Kurt Molnar from Stifel. Please go ahead.
Good morning, folks. Just three broad questions that I throw out. To whatever degree you're willing to discuss it, could you give a little bit more detail on some of the drivers on what we're permitting the savings on drilling days? Second broad kind of question, in the context of the liquids rich locations in the Cardium and the Falher, relative to the location inventory seen by yourselves and the engineers, could you give us some disclosure as to how many of those are already captured within the existing reserve report? And then third, just to whatever degree you can you give us some kind of allocation as to what kind of expectation for capital spending per quarter in 2012? That's it in terms of the questions, if you could address those. Thanks.
Sure. Thanks, Kurt. You want to talk about the drilling days reduction? I mean, I think Scott kind of alluded to the fact that we're almost, with this last three pace setter wells, we've almost cut the days in half that it typically takes us to drill a well.
It's too early to really get carried away with projections there. You know, we'll give us a quarter to see how this goes further. But, you know, $1 million a well off is a tremendous change in the economic attractiveness of drilling, even at these low prices. So that's something to be excited about, but not get carried away with at this stage of the game, I think.
But just on that front, as opposed to extrapolating, I guess I'm more interested in what do you think are the key drivers as to what's allowing for that?
It's just continual refinement to the way we're drilling our wells. You know, I don't really want to get into too many details of what we're doing, but it's not anything earth-shattering, and we are very optimistic that we can apply it in different areas and different well types. So I think we'll just leave it at that for now.
Okay, thanks, guys.
You know, your question about the Cardium and the Falher inventory, I think, as Dave alluded to, very few of our Falher locations that we have internally are booked in the reserve report. What did you say, about 30-some locations versus an inventory of 100 and some?
They recognized 34, and we recognized 182, and that's primarily due to proximity. You have to have very close proximity in most cases for the conservative criteria that the reserves auditors use, and we're seeing beyond that. We're seeing the running room that the play has on the lands that we own and have mapped out with good well control. So
maybe one out of five Falher wells has been recognized already, and probably, you know, when we get to the end of this year, maybe we shouldn't be surprised to see that three out of the four Falher wells we drilled are brand new, that never existed in the reserve report. And so we're not really converting locations that already exist in the reserve report. On the Cardium side, though, it's probably the reverse. With a couple hundred locations recognized in the reserve report, I'd expect that the vast majority of the Cardiums that we drill this year are already recognized in the reserve report in some form or another, either proven undeveloped or probable additional. The last question you asked me was about quarterly capital spending. You know, I comment there that current sort of 5 to 6 rig burn rate, we're running, I think, sort of $35 million a month. If we run that out to, you know, mid-April, and maybe we get started, sometime in June, then we probably get 5 months at that sort of rate. So that'll give you a bit of an indication of where the spending is in the first half of the year. And then, you know, obviously if we're picking up activity in the back half of the year, our spending levels will be more like the peaks of the fourth quarter of 2011, where we were closer to $40 million a month for the last 6 months of the year or something, in order to, get to where we want to get to. And so that's hopefully taking advantage of a lot of reduction in service costs when other people aren't busy, and doing a lot more. But like Scott mentioned, we might actually be able to get that done with fewer rigs than we had assumed, just because, I mean, if we're drilling wells in half the time, then it takes half as many rigs to drill the same number of wells. Maybe we even get a few more wells in there. So it's pretty exciting that we can start to grind away on the capital costs on the front end. It makes a huge difference on the rate of return and obviously gives us a lot of confidence. We're generating very high rates of return even at the very low gas price.
Perfect. Thanks very much, guys.
Thank you. There are no further questions registered. I'd like to turn the meeting back over to Mr. G.
Okay. Well, thanks, Jenny, and thanks for everybody that took time to listen in today. It is definitely a busy week. There's conferences going on and lots of companies reporting. Just in closing, we had an unbelievable 2011, a little disappointing, of course, where gas prices took us at the start of this year, kind of threw a bunch of cold water on the excitement that we had last year. But, you know, on behalf of the management team here and the board of directors, I do want to send out a big thank you to the Peyto team. Our staff did a fantastic job this year. You know, we've only got 35 people, and it's amazing what they accomplished in 2011, and we're exceptionally excited about what we can accomplish in 2012. And even with, you know, the low commodity price that we're paying very close attention to, we feel we can generate very good return on the capital we're going to put to work this year. And likely we're going to get a better gas price than what we're looking at today on the forward strip. So that means even better returns. And so I think it's a great time to be opportunistic. We can pick up lands and opportunities in this environment, and we can aggressively build. And I don't think this low gas price is going to last for too long. So we come out the other side of it, we're going to be bigger, we're going to be stronger, we're going to have much more production, and then the cash flow is going to be incredible when the commodity price recovers. So I think the future for Peyto is very exciting right now. We've got, again, more opportunity than ever, and we're staffed ready to go, and we're not going to sit by and just hope and pray for a better gas price. We're going to make good returns in this current environment. Thanks for listening in, and we'll be back to you with the first quarter in the spring.